And welcome to the Deep Dive Radio Show. As always, I'm your host, Nick Espinoza, and we're going to be talking about all things cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology related. And I think we're one of the only ones out there that's doing that right now. If you'd like to be part of the radio show in any way, shape, or form, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send us an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. We have an action-packed show as always. There's always a lot to cover, so stick around with us as we deep dive into a topic and we catch up on everything else. So without further ado, let's begin. And I've got a great program for you today. Obviously, we are in the middle of the coronavirus. And so if I sound a little different here coming out of your radio, it's because I'm actually broadcasting out of my home studio as opposed to the really cool radio station, local to where I live. And so by virtue of that, I appreciate it. But we all have to do our part in social distancing and sheltering in place. And I don't want to get any other radio host or support staff infected in any way. And I'm sure they don't want to infect me. So bear with me here. But we've got a lot to get through, and this is going to be our coronavirus or COVID-19 edition, where we're going to be talking about news, specifically as it relates to the tech industry and cybersecurity regards coronavirus, because while all of you guys are hearing about the World Health Organization and hospitals and all of that, we are on the other side here in cybersecurity, keeping everything secure from hackers and all of that. So stick around. It's going to be a great show. And as always, let's start with the news. And this news segment is a bit different than the previous ones in the sense that every single bit of news here is going to be related to the coronavirus or COVID-19, but it's all related to the tech industry or cybersecurity. These are the stories you typically don't see as you are listening to or watching the news regarding the World Health Organization or the ever-rising infection count or, at least here in the United States, our lack of testing kits and response and on and on and on. These are the tech news stories that affect you, but they're not really getting a lot of news coverage. And by virtue of that, you're going to hear them here probably for the very first time, most of these on the Deep Dive Radio. And with that, let's begin. And in No Good Deed Goes Unpunished news, in a recent news story reported by Tech Times, Chiara Hospital, which is located in Italy, basically had a 3D printer that was able to save the lives of 10 different Italian coronavirus patients, basically by being able to produce a unique replacement valve for broken ventilators just after the hospital supply ran out. And that is really cool. But because of this act of bravery, a medical device manufacturer, saw this and has even threatened to sue the very group of people who volunteered to print the 3D printed valve and to save lives of these patients in Italy. Now, this valve, which officially is manufactured by this medical device manufacturer, and I could not find who that medical device manufacturer was, costs about $11,000 to the hospital to basically manufacture or rather sell, while the replica, which the volunteers made with their 3D printer, only costs about $1. Now, the $1 version obviously is not nearly as durable, but they are doing the trick and they can be printed on demand. And so I find that very easy. Now, the only reason why this innovation came to life was because of the urgent need of these valves, and the hospital was treating patients and they were running out. And so two individuals, Christian Fracassi, as well as Alessandro Ramioli, decided to offer their 3D printer to manufacture these replicas basically to save lives in Italy. Now, the manufacturer was actually approached by these two in the hopes that they would be able to get the blueprints in an urgent attempt to print, print the things that were needed, but they were declined by the manufacturer, and they were even threatened to be sued for patent infringement. And so these two figured out the dimensions on their own, printed the replacement valves, and they started working on getting lives. Now, this is obviously a huge, huge thing, because if you are making these for insanely cheap, even if they have, let's say, 1/10 the life of the expensive $11,000 one, you can rip these things out and replicate these things for so inexpensive, providing you've got the plastics and the printer, that you can keep going with this. And that is a life-saving thing. And so I think we are going to see, by virtue of stuff like this, the courts around the globe looking at situations like this and saying, okay, what do we do with this? Do we basically have a patent infringement case here, which we do, but it's not like these individuals are trying to make money. They are trying to save lives. And I'm really hoping the courts are going to say, well,
you know, okay, now that the situation is done and the coronavirus is over, you guys stop making these by court order and the hospital has to go back to buying it from the manufacturer, which hopefully now will be lowering their prices or selling them, let's say, less expensive stuff. Or maybe these two decide to go ahead and create their own company with a slightly different design that would be outside of the patent infringement and make a ton of money because they've just innovated, you know, in a way that the traditional manufacturing hasn't. So I'm hoping that the courts are going to turn a blind eye, but we'll see what happens with this. But I think this is really cool news, and I think it's really crappy of this manufacturer to, you know, start going after them. I can understand protecting your intellectual property. It's one of those things I do for my clients in business. But at the same token, we are talking about, you know, a rather unprecedented situation in the last century or so where the entire world has to pull together. And so hopefully something good will come out of this one way or the other. And in surveillance news, and I found this one actually really fascinating, a surveillance company says that it's deploying a coronavirus detecting camera, and they're based out of the United States. Now, this is an Austin, Texas-based company that is launching, and I quote, artificially intelligent thermal cameras that it claims will be able to detect fevers in people and then basically send an alert to whoever is monitoring the camera that they could possibly be carrying the coronavirus. Now, the company is Athena Security, and they're pitching the product to be used in grocery stores, hospitals, and voting locations, and on and on and on. It claims to be deploying the product at several customer locations in the coming weeks, including government agencies, airports, and Fortune 500 companies as well. And to quote them, our fever detection COVID-19 screening system is now part of our platform, along with our gun detection system, which connects directly to your current security camera to deliver fast and accurate threat detection. Now, this is interesting because I had read an article a while back regarding temperatures in humans actually lowering from the standard 98.6 degrees. We have in the last, I want to say it was like century or something, seen a slight decline in the standard operating temperature for humans. I know when I pick up a thermometer, I'm usually like 97 and change on any of the thermometers that I pick up, and maybe it's a degree off, I don't know. But because of conditioning of humans, we have air conditioning and all of that. You know, our body temperatures are not typically running at 98.6, or a lot of us. And so let's assume for a moment that I'm running at like 97.3 or, you know, whatever I am, and I'm then for at 98.6 running a fever. If their camera is picking me up, I'm going to pass right through that system because they don't know what my default temperature is. Conversely, if I'm 98.6 and I'm running a fever, then odds are I'm going to get tagged. And so I'm very curious to see where that's going to go, or you know, what they're going to do with those kinds of false positives or just misses in general. But it's a very interesting idea, and I'm very curious to see if we are going to start to see cases of people being needlessly detained or rejected from facilities, locations, whatever, because the camera incorrectly identifies them as a possible coronavirus infected person. So it's interesting news, but I thought that is you know, something that everybody would enjoy here, you know, in some way, shape, or form, because this is coming, and this just makes complete sense because we have thermal detection systems and now they are going mainstream. And so be prepared to basically be scanned when you walk through an airport or enter a large building. This is the new way of the world. And this news actually comes from March 12th, which seems like another planet at this point. But I think it's very important to talk about, especially because we need to make sure that we are maintaining our privacy through this. And The Verge had an article from March 12th called "A Sneaky Attempt to End Encryption is Worming Its Way Through Congress." Now, here's what's going on. Basically, as we're focused on the coronavirus, other stories are sneaking past public awareness. That's part of what I'm trying to do here, you know, and inform you guys of this. And one of those stories actually is the Eliminating Abuse and Rampant Neglect of Interactive Technologies Act, also known as ERNIT, that's the acronym, which was the subject of a Senate hearing on Wednesday, March 11th. Now, the ERNIT Act was introduced by Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, along with Senator Josh Hawley, who's a Republican of Missouri, and Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California, on March 5th. The premise of this bill is that technology companies have to earn the Section 230 protections rather than being granted immunity by default as the Communication Decency Act has provided for about two decades or so. I think it's a little more than that. Now, basically, to combat crime like sex trafficking, major platforms like Facebook would have to weaken or eliminate encryption so that federal law enforcement could access all of the data on the platform without having to break anything. Here's the problem. 99.999% of all of the users are basically law-abiding, which means if we are using this platform, we get zero privacy thanks to the 0.001%. This is another example of the lowest common denominator in lawmaking. Now, if you're not familiar with Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, it is simply this in a nutshell, and I'm not going to get complex here, but basically, if you spin up a platform like Facebook and you have a user that is not under your employ, you can't control the user, that user is just putting what they want in the space that you've provided as a platform. If that user is doing something illegal under federal law, you as the platform provider are not liable. You're not publishing that person. You have no control over that person. You get a pass. And so when you see about, let's say, crimes that happen on Facebook, for example, the New Zealand shooter, basically went on a mass shooting spree and did it through Facebook Live and streaming. Facebook was not liable for that, at least here in the United States, because all they did was give space. They don't control the content. Now, what this law is basically saying is that if Facebook wants to enjoy that protection, they need to let law enforcement in so that law enforcement can see what everybody is doing in order to catch that 0.001% of people that would be going on shooting rampages or child trafficking or all of these things. And nobody, for the record, wants to see a active shooter situation or children trafficked or anything like that. But at the same token, the vast majority of us are law-abiding. We don't do these things. And so where's the balance? Where is that? By default, the law says it's the lowest common denominator. And so if you've got 100 people in a room and one of them is a criminal and they're going to make a law for that one person, the other 99 people basically in some way, shape, or form have to suffer or be degraded, at least in the eyes of the law, in some way to account for that one person. And so that's the balance and that's the argument, but it looks like Congress is trying to do that. So if you are having private and personal conversations that are legal, and Lord knows people share, God knows whatever, between each other on Facebook platforms like Messenger and WhatsApp, not to mention just posting in Facebook, that could pose a very serious problem because law enforcement now can basically go in and look at your pictures, your video, your texts, and everything else, because Facebook has to let them in to prove that they can keep that Section 230 and basically be absolved legally of anything malicious that you do. And so I think that's a very serious issue, and that's something that has completely flown under the radar. And as I was doing research, for the radio show and also for my daily videos, I have been collecting stories like this because as the world is focused on the coronavirus, governments love to back end stuff like this in there. And I think that's a very serious problem we need to discuss. And so with that, hopefully the law won't pass, news for the coronavirus outbreak.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
And in Department of Justice coronavirus news, in a memo sent to all U.S. attorneys on this past Monday about actually, if I'm looking at the date, 2 weeks ago at this point, which feels like an eternity, Attorney General William Barr prioritized prosecuting cyber criminals seeking to exploit fears about the coronavirus. Now, scammers who have been taking advantage of the coronavirus pandemic by spreading COVID-19 themed spear phishing emails have caught the attention of the Department of Justice. Now, Barr said in his memo, and I quote, "The pandemic is dangerous enough without wrongdoers seeking to profit from public panic, and this sort of conduct cannot be tolerated." And quite frankly, I completely agree with our Attorney General here, William Barr, in the sense that we in the cybersecurity community have seen an absolute explosion in cyber attacks, whether it is to the home worker or to other critical infrastructure like hospitals and all of that. And I will be talking about that in the deep dive segment as well, because we are seriously fighting back against this. But I am very happy to see the U.S. Department of Justice going after people that would put up, let's say, fake websites and sell fake cures or fake filtering masks and all of that. A lot of people fall for these. And in a panic situation, when people are turning to, let's say, Google or the internet to try to buy things that they can't normally get because the supply chains have just been really shot now. You know, if you live in the United States and you've been to your supermarket, especially if you're in or around an urban area, you've probably seen that your supermarket is basically a ghost town, at least in terms of the shelves. I couldn't find toilet paper to save my life for at least a week or so. Fortunately, we had some on hand, but, you know, you never know. And so by virtue of that, a lot of scammers are starting to exploit that and really shift that focus. And so I'm going to be going through that a little bit more in depth in the deep dive. But for now, the U.S. Department of Justice is taking a keen eye at this, and they are starting to crack down. And quite frankly, that can't happen fast enough. I really hope they start laying down the law. And so that is your Department Justice news for this broadcast. And in entertainment tech news, and yes, we are actually doing that here, because this article is actually coming out of Entertainment Weekly, of all places, and then eventually others picked up on this. But Netflix has been asked to slow down their streaming. So basically, the internet doesn't break. Now, this was originally coming out of Europe, and it's now on its way here in the United States. But I think this is basically a sign of things to come. Now, the European Union has asked Netflix to basically tap the brakes on its download speeds in order to reduce network bandwidth now that millions of people have committed to staying at home. And so we are starting to see a major shift of people obviously working from home. Netflix has seen an explosion in traffic, especially in the European Union, that was getting hit before the United States was, and now the United States is in this boat. But a European Commissioner Thierry Breton tweeted Wednesday night that he spoke with Netflix CEO Reed Hastings about lowering the service's streaming speed. It's part of an effort to encourage people and companies to switch back to standard definition instead of high definition, let alone something like 4K, when it's not necessary, for somebody's viewing. Now, if you are not familiar, at least here in the United States, Netflix accounts for something like 1/4 to 1/3 of all bandwidth in the United States. That is a massive, massive data flow, and it gets jacked way up when you start watching it in 4K and you're streaming it over 6 megabit a second. And as we have a major infrastructure shift here in the United States, as people start abandoning, massive, skyscrapers like the Sears Tower in Chicago or whatever they're calling it this week, and they're moving home, now the residential lines are getting hit hard, and we are seeing a very serious uptick in this. In fact, the CEO of Italy's largest telecom actually came out and said that they saw a 70% spike in their bandwidth usage because all the kids were home playing Fortnite and Call of Duty, and all of those things. So this is a very serious issue. And if we are keeping continuity of service flowing for businesses while we are all sitting at home, or, even for colleges as we are remoting into, work, I'm not in college, so I don't know why I'm saying we, I do sit on the board of a college, though. But as we are sitting at home doing these things, whether it's education or work or any one of these things, that's actually a very serious issue because we are putting a strain on the internet through our media consumption, which we've just simply had. We've just simply taken that for granted. And so I think we're going to see where this goes, but it's going to be a very interesting issue because now we're all going to be watching things in basically DVD quality because that is going to conserve a huge amount of bandwidth, and Netflix can simply tap the brakes. YouTube is now doing that as well, putting everything down temporarily to standard definition because, again, we are trying to save bandwidth, to ensure that productivity remains in America. So it's a very interesting time that we're living in. But FYI, if your Netflix starts to look kind of crappy, you're going to know why. And in really cool coronavirus tech news, and I've got a few of these here, there is a new test that is possibly going to cost $1 and takes 10 minutes to get you verified for the coronavirus. Now, this is coming out of the United Kingdom, and the company is Mologic, and basically they're in collaboration with a Senegalese research foundation called the Institut Pasteur de Dakar. This is coming out of Africa. Now, using this technology, they are taking a home pregnancy kit and a malaria test, along with saliva and a fingerprint, Basically, this test, when they combine all of these things, could be ready for sale by June and cost less than $1 a piece. Now, in Africa, they will be manufactured in Senegal by Diatropics, which is a newly built diagnostics manufacturing facility run by the Pasteur Institute. And basically, they are looking at spinning this up. Now, the current COVID-19 test, if you didn't know, is actually called a PCR test, and it detects the genetic material of the pathogen in a laboratory process that could take several hours and cost over $400 in some private facilities. And so when we are looking, you know, around the world, and I have to say, I have to fully admit here that, you know, I think prior to this, Americans had a little bit of hubris, you know, about our health system. We had readily accessible, you know, health and access to a lot of things. And we are finding that we are now short on tests as well. If you are presenting symptoms, at least in my area here in the Chicagoland area, they are only testing those people that are basically extremely sick and presenting all of those infections. It's very hard to find tests in my area. Hopefully that is improving. So something that is being manufactured in mass that, you know, where we have almost no health infrastructure in some parts of Africa that would only cost a dollar to produce is a huge thing that the entire world could use. And so I'm very happy to see that happening. And hopefully that will, you know, that will be ramping up, as they said, in June, and they'll be able to disseminate that to the world. And so hopefully our testing relief may, interestingly enough, come from Africa. And that is something that a lot of us don't consider, but Africa is innovative and they are proving it right here. And so hopefully this test will actually be a standard that the world can adopt as we are moving on. And I've got more news on this really cool, exciting and different kind of tech in this coronavirus coming up for you. But I thought that was really cool and I thought you guys would enjoy that. And in online dating news, and you know this is impacted by the coronavirus, there's no doubt of that, a representative from the dating service Coffee Meets Bagel, I think I've heard of them, shared results from a March 17th survey with Mediaite, which showed that 78% of U.S. users are, quote, putting a pause on in-person dates, with 39% planning to text their matches more, 29% planning to call more, and 28% planning to do video calls. Now, the survey also showed that 7% of U.S. users are mentioning coronavirus each day, and 81% of U.S. singles are practicing social distancing, and 19% are self-quarantine, basically doing a self-quarantine. This is per the platforms, as they are obviously able to read your messages and all of that. Now, people may actually have to get to know people instead of just hooking up, because we are seeing reports of more positive interactions between romantic interests online, and apps that are basically for hooking up, like Tinder, Grindr, etc., are taking serious hits in use, because if you're using a Grindr, odds are you're just looking for some kind of hookup, as opposed to, let's say, a long-term romantic relationship. There tends to be a difference, although I'm sure people find long-term romance on Tinder and Grindr and all of that. But there's a good section of that that is basically like, you know, hey, let's get together tonight kind of stuff. And nobody wants to get together tonight because everybody's afraid of the coronavirus. And so that is an industry that I think is, right now taking a very serious hit. But wait, what may actually emerge from this is that if you are interested in romantic relationships and you are primarily, let's say, a Tinder or Grindr user, you may actually go to a platform that is for more serious dating just to, actively engage with somebody that you might be interested in, which means you may actually start a conversation with somebody and get to know somebody, which may actually improve the health of your relationship. So that might actually be a good thing. We'll see. But either way, if you are dating right now, odds are, like many of them, you are probably not meeting your dates in person. So video chat or something else, it is. And this coronavirus news for tech is coming from the Seattle Times. Now, the U.S. government and the tech industry are discussing ways to harness location data to combat the coronavirus. Now, here's what's going on. The U.S. government is in active talks with Facebook, Google, and a wide array of tech companies and health experts about how they can use data basically taken from Americans' phones to combat the coronavirus, including tracking whether people are keeping one another at safe distance to basically stem this outbreak. In recent interviews, Facebook executives said that the U.S. government is particularly interested in understanding patterns of people's movements, which can be derived through the data that the company collects when the user allows it. And quite frankly, I think most of us are probably opting into Facebook because I don't think Facebook really pays attention, to their whole opt-in thing. I think there's a ton of people that are just, or rather Facebook is collecting a ton of information that you don't realize, but that is a complete aside. Now, Facebook in the past has provided this information to researchers in the form of statistics, which, you know, in the case of the coronavirus, could help officials predict where the next hotspot in the United States could be, or even the globe, because Facebook has such a global presence, or decide where to allocate health resources. So for example, let's say here in Chicago or New York, which we know is being, I think they're the hardest hit right now. I recently just heard they're actually setting up triage hospitals in Central Park, which quite frankly is just, it's mind-boggling to me. And doesn't it feel like, just on a complete aside, doesn't it feel like 2 weeks ago when, you know, we were all just living our lives and doing whatever we wanted, doesn't just 2 or 3 weeks ago from when you're listening to this feel like a century away? Just on a complete aside, I think that's just amazing to me. Now, to go back to this, the official with the White House's Office for Science and Technology, who spoke on this situation, said, and I quote, "We're encouraged by American technology companies looking to leverage aggregate anonymized data, to glean key insights for COVID-19 modeling efforts." Now, the officials basically said this might help public health officials, researchers, and scientists improve their understanding of the spread of COVID-19 and the transmission, of the disease. And so basically, the White House also stressed that if they are building this database, if they are using this information, they are not building a government database for this, which is always the problem that we have. We are always balancing surveillance with privacy, and they seem to be, you know, two sides of one coin, each, you know, pushing at each other. And so we are obviously going to be looking at this in the cybersecurity community to make sure that they are maintaining and adhering to our privacy. And believe me, we will be blowing whistles and bringing it to light here on this radio show and elsewhere if we are finding that they are, in fact, violating our privacy. But we'll see. But the government looks like they're going to be getting data from Facebook, Google, and a whole bunch of other large tech company platforms to track how this virus is spreading. And hopefully some good will come out of that, hopefully not surveillance. And so that is very interesting. But that is some of your government news, here in the coronavirus outbreak.
And stay tuned to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show as we take a quick break for a public service announcement. We'll be back right after that.